Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Lorefield Podcast, the podcast for Starfield lore news discussion. So excited to be with you today as we discuss the latest in Starfield. Meeting our crew today with her new controller and headphone, she's all decked out for September 6th, it's Lexi.
Hello.
And there's a reason why I've been counting down the days until this episode of the podcast. You count on him to count down the release date countdown. It's from down under, it's the count, Starfield countdown.
Hello.
Starfield Countdown, you have been a staple of the Starfield community for years now, posting how many days are left until release every single day on Twitter and creating a Starfield Countdown Discord server in the process. We've been trying to make this happen for over a year, this recording. We have a new Todd Howard interview to talk about, which had some really cool details, but first I want to dive right into my favorite segment we do, which is our guest's Bethesda story. So, you have a totally open floor count, and with as much time as you need, starting from your earliest Bethesda Game Studios memory, please tell us why you fell in love with these games, and eventually what motivated you to start this hype-driven platform that you've so successfully created.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is it's a very interesting question, because it's a sort of weird story, but I think around 2009, 2008 probably, I think it was just after it released, my friend owned a video rental store, and they were closing down because he was moving to the United States. I'm Australian, if you couldn't tell. And they let me take one random game from the shelf, and I saw Fallout 3, and I thought Fallout 3 just looked really interesting, even though I was super young. So I picked it up and took it home. Eventually ended up getting all the DLC, New Vegas, then getting Skyrim, and then the rest is history. I love Bethesda. Everything Bethesda.
That's awesome. And then I have to ask, what gave you the idea to start this amazing platform you've built? Over 13,000 followers on your Twitter, doing incredible things over there. Everyone loves you. You're positive. You're uplifting. You've got great takes. So what started the whole countdown Twitter idea?
I saw the Cyberpunk countdown. Well, if you remember the Cyberpunk countdown from like 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, and before that, way before that. But I thought that it'd be a fun idea to do that with Starfield, because I didn't want to just be a countdown, because I know that there are always those countdown accounts that are just bots, that they're boring, and I didn't want to be boring. So I thought, if I get in early, maybe I can make a little community out of this and like be myself while I also do that countdown. So that's what motivated me, and it's working so far. So I'm glad for all the support.
That's awesome. Another sort of icebreaker question I want to ask you. We're just a couple weeks out from the Starfield Direct, still kind of reeling it, still discovering new details as well. Do you have a favorite showcase moment? Just one single thing from the Starfield Direct? What is it?
Yes. It's kind of strange again, but like just when we got to see New Atlantis from different angles, because I think it showed the scale of the game and the scale of the planets. Like I was so excited. I had always had the thought since last year's showcase that like I could just walk away from New Atlantis and look at it from a distance, and we got to see that. Now I know I'm able to actually do that. So yeah, weird, but I'm excited to just look at a city from far away.
That's awesome. I love it. I do think my favorite, like from a cinematography perspective, my favorite shot was when we saw New Atlantis from across the lake. That was, it looked so good. Yeah, that's a great pick.
It did.
So I think we'll talk about this new Todd Howard interview on the Kind of Funny XCast. It was 49 minutes long, so longer than the Starfield Direct, actually. It clarified some points of confusion about... There we go. Sorry.
It's also a bit controversial.
Sure. Yeah. And we'll get to why. First of all, one of the first things we learned is that about 10% of the planets have any life on them at all. People have taken that, they kind of reversed that statistic to say 90% of the planets have nothing on them. So there's been some negativity there. Lex, I'll ask you, as far as this 10% of planets having life goes, what are your thoughts and feelings about it?
Realistic. It's realistic. I don't really mind that. Because let's say you go to, like, Mercury or Venus. Do you really expect you're going to find life there? Like, you look at Venus, for example. All our probes melt in, like, 10 minutes. So. It's not exactly a fun place to be. Especially if you're a living organism.
Gotcha, sure, sure. I do think there's some sleight of hand being played here by Bethesda, because with 10% of planets having life on them, it's estimated that about 10% of planets lie in their star's Goldilocks zone, but it's estimated that the percentage of planets with life is a lot lower than that. So Bethesda's kind of being a little sneaky and saying basically any planet in the Goldilocks zone will have life, which is fair, and it'll make the game more interesting. But I do. It's kind of interesting the way they've kind of twisted that little statistic to say 10% of planets in the Goldilocks zone is actually 10% of planets with life. I kind of like what they did.
I think that it's just, like Lexi said, realistic. And that is the main appeal of it for me. And I think for a lot of other people, I think the more casual viewers or more casual fans of Starfield, I guess, are concerned that it's just going to be sort of similar to No Man's Sky in the sense that it's going to be more sandboxy than it is an RPG. But I feel like that's not a concern, because that's still 100 planets with life on them. And then we don't know what those other planets are going to, in like what that means for us, what the other planets are going to have, what we can do on them. We know we can build outposts. We can get life on there by like sending our crew down. So it seems like there's a lot more stuff to do. So I wouldn't be concerned.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I kind of find it bewildering that anyone would be upset at the thought of Bethesda games becoming more sandboxy, because you still have the RPG there. It's the most dialogue lines ever in a Bethesda game, more than Fallout 4 and Skyrim combined. But now we also have the sandbox elements. Like, it's like having a BOGO sale on games and being mad that you got the free one. A little bit is the way I see it.
Yeah. And it's just the fact that they have to keep reinforcing that there's so many, like there's a big focus on RPG elements is really interesting, because it's like, are people not seeing it?
Right. Yeah. We also have another statistic on planets, not really a statistic, but just a fact. And I've been begging for this for years. Longtime listeners probably remember it. We now know for sure that some planets do have just one biome across the whole thing, but a lot have many biomes per planet, including Jemison, which has polar ice caps. This makes me so happy, because it's, again, realistic. It's also a lot of work for Bethesda, for them to put multiple biomes on a lot of planets. That's wild. Like, oh boy. So yeah, this one just made me so happy. Is there a certain biome count that you plan on exploring? Oh no, that's a stupid question. Actually, no. Yeah, I'll run with it. On Jemison, we saw kind of where New Atlantis was. It seemed kind of warm, moist. We also had the polar ice caps. Are you going to go straight for the polar ice caps or the more temperate environment? Where are you going to land first?
Good question. I don't know. Lexi, you go first.
Probably the jungle, but the problem with jungles is there's a lot of hostile creatures that spawn in the tropical environments. Because I think there are like really deadly spiders. They're like banana spiders. I don't think that's the name. But there's something to do with bananas, and those things are like dangerous. And if Starfield is anything like the dangerous tropical wildlife that our rainforests have, like in the Amazon, I don't know. I think giant insects, just saying, I've spoke about this before, giant insects.
We did see a few.
There were a few giant insects.
Just saying, if you have something like arachnophobia, maybe avoid the jungle, because like there's gonna be some like spider-like creatures, surely.
I think this also like sort of ties in with I know it's way later in the interview, but Todd said that this is like their biggest game for accessibility. And I think that there's probably going to be like an arachnophobia mode. I've been seeing that a lot in more recent games. Anyway, that's completely unrelated.
Yes, it's I believe there's one in Grounded.
Yeah, there's one in Grounded. There and was one like... in Jedi Survivor.
Oh, I wish there was one in Fallen Order, because there's spider creatures in that.
Yeah, there are heaps of spiders in Fallen Order. There was like two in Survivor. But, you know, at least they did it.
Yeah. I tolerated frostbite spiders and spiders in ESO, which are arguably the more disgusting spiders in that game. I could tolerate those. Maybe a shiver when I killed them, but I think I could handle a spider-like enemy.
I think the problem with spider-like enemies in Starfield is that you just... like, we can't predict what they're going to look like. Like, we'll know that they'll be sort of spider-like, but then everything else is going to be super alien, which is a good thing. But if you don't like spiders, have fun with that.
Yeah, Oh, no, I was just going to say, when I stream, like, my stream playthrough for my Xbox, I might have webcam on, so if I do... And there's creatures like that. Well, prepare for entertainment.
Yeah. So we know that we can handle the spiders, at least we think so. But one of the things we learned was that creatures can fight each other and we'll watch it happen. And Todd told a really great story during the interview, which was that some of the more predatory creatures will actually find and kill all of the passive creatures, and then you'll find their bodies and you'll know that there's a predator nearby. So...
doesn't sound like too much of a problem. Sounds like it'd be fun to like show up on a planet and then there's like a bunch of dead aliens, and you know, like what you said, Mitch, that there's a predator there.
Yeah. On the topic of creatures, we also learned that there are no mounts. You explore fully on foot. You can't ride creatures. There are also no land vehicles. You explore around your ship. This one's a little bit controversial too. Count, were you expecting mounts / land vehicles? And were you disappointed when we found out they aren't in the game?
Can't say I was expecting mounts. Thought land vehicles were a possibility, but... knowing Bethesda, I just thought that, you know, like, I don't really care, because I have faith in them to do it, like, to pull off that full on-foot exploration, as they've done with Fallout and The Elder Scrolls before. I mean, they were horses, but, like, I wasn't expecting any mounts just because there were horses in The Elder Scrolls. But, yeah, I just, it doesn't bother me too much, but I do understand why some people will be concerned, because it does sort of, imply that the planets will be significantly smaller than people expected if you have to explore on foot. But again, if that is the case, I don't think that's a problem either. And I don't think that they'll like shrink the planets just to make it easier to explore on foot.
Interesting, yeah. My only thing with the land vehicles, I'm completely fine with them not being in the game. It's just that there was that one concept art that definitely showed a rover. That was definitely a rover that got everyone's hopes up. I wish they hadn't shown that concept art, because that planted the seed, so to speak. Because I was expecting land vehicles because of that. I thought that was one of the tricks they had up their sleeves for the Starfield Direct, and I was wrong.
Well, land vehicles might have been cut fairly recently. You never know. Like, that concept art was shown a while ago, so it could have been something that they wanted to implement, and then they couldn't, so they had to cut it.
I do suspect it was cut content, yeah.
It could be DLC.
That would make people outraged. there would be some tantrums if that happened. I don't know.
I didn't expect it. I mean, they've never designed their worlds for vehicles. That's why we've never had them. Is everyone's like moaning, oh, the engine could never do this. And people were memeing about the spaceships. Oh, there's no way it's going to handle free flight. I mean, they said the same thing about multiplayer, but, you know, they got Fallout 76 working. And we've got a flyable ship. So, you know, all the naysayers get debunked anyway. I didn't expect it, but I can kind of see why people would want land vehicles. But then if you watch the direct and you look at, you know, like the entrance ramp.
Yeah.
It's too small to fit anything. Like, it's the same. There's no bigger version of it. It's all the same in all the ships they show. There is no way that thing can fit Vasco and a buggy and then get you in. Like, would you climb over it? The only way I could see them doing in it is when they've got more time, DLC, and it's planet bound, which means you can't take it with you. It's bound to your base. So you have to build one in every planet you've got a base on. That's the way I'd see them doing it, if in DLC. But the practice that they haven't promised it is more of, if we get it in DLC, it's a bonus.
You make a few really good points there. I think what you said about people like memeing the spaceship thing and saying the engine couldn't handle it is just... it's evidence of like why we shouldn't have expected the land vehicles. I just feel like Bethesda wouldn't, if we already got the spaceships, I feel like they wouldn't, knowing that people, well, not everyone, but there are always people that are negative. I don't think they would have thrown that much in there if it was going to be that big of a, like an issue, that big of a struggle to get done, especially because they haven't done it before. So, I mean, the spaceships are already a big leap, like I said. You never know.
To tie this conversation back to the one we were having about creatures, the size of that ship ramp, not only do I agree that you couldn't get a land vehicle up there, I wonder if and how we'll be able to transport creatures between planets, because if we want to make them fight at our outposts, or if we want to sell them or farm them, whatever. Now, bear in mind also, we can customize the ships, so there could be much larger ramps that, you know, in theory, if they wanted to do DLC, you could get a vehicle up there or get a larger creature into your ship. I don't know if we'll be getting creatures in our ships. That might wreak too much havoc, but another thought.
I'm gonna blow your mind, possibly. So there was one ship they showed and it had a bunch of like freighter containers. What if you just stick the animal in one of those? And then
that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
Like Jurassic
there could
World
be like a specific, yeah, like there could be like a specific cage sort of addition, like a cargo thing.
You've got like a giraffe like creature and like its neck sticks out, you'd like the container, and you just got this like chip. Like, it's like a dog sticking its head out the window when you're flying it.
If I'm not mistaken, that's exactly how it worked in Fallout 4's DLC, where you had several workshop items for each specific monster that you could keep in a cage. There was like a Mirelurk cage, a Deathclaw cage, and that was they made that work.
You had to bait them in, so you had to pull it down, then you had to wait a few days away from the settlement, and then it would capture it.
Okay.
It's a weird version of Pokemon.
I think it's that's definitely a possibility. Like, if not in the base game, then DLC, definitely. I don't know how many, if like people will be happy to have two single-player games in a row with the same DLC, but that's the right. Better than horse armor.
Yeah. People wondering what Please. Starfield's horse armor might be, and we do have the Mars skin pack that we already know about.
Please, please, Vasco armor, please. I would pay top dollar, like, for Vasco armor. I'd pay the whole $239 for it.
Yeah, there are going to be heaps of mods.
It was confirmed that Vasco can't wear a hat.
Damn.
Yeah. But Todd
never said Vasco can't wear a bra.
Oh, jeez. Todd did say that modders can probably put a hat on Vasco, and I'm sure they can put a bra on Vasco as well.
I want to
give him some thicker Assaultron legs.
There you go.
Yeah, that'll happen. You'll get that.
Yeah, I will even, like, donate to request a modder to make a mod like that. Like, that would be hilarious. It's already a meme already. It's more like an inside joke in the community.
I just had a
Vasco
random thought. Sort of like the legs reminded me. what if we don't have ground vehicles? Because we can just hop on top of Vasco, and we can Vasco can take us everywhere.
Does that count as a mount?
Yeah, I'd love to mount Vasco, if you know what I mean. I'm sorry.
Fisto capabilities. Please assume
okay, position. This episode is automatically explicit. I apologize.
I don't know if the algorithm will catch that though. That was pretty. It was innuendo.
Oh, I meant like the on like Spotify and stuff.
Oh. All right. Well, I'm going to Mitch button this conversation. We were talking about ships, and we learned a few other things about ships. One of which is that we learned a bit more about how stealing ships work. So you can steal any ship in the game, and you can customize any ship in the game because every single ship is built using the in-game tools. What they did say is that you can steal a ship and upgrade its parts immediately, but in order to like customize it and rearrange it, you have to register it, which I believe costs credits. So the ship customization really should be broken down into two separate pieces. You have the upgrades. Think of like Mario Kart or something, where these components have, you can like upgrade. No, not Mario Kart, but like some racers that you can just, without changing the look of your vehicle, you can upgrade its specific parts and get more speed or more agility or whatever. But then you have the kind of like the total build piece by piece side of ship customization. I was thinking of it as one system, but there are very much two distinct systems going on here.
So if you steal a ship, can you like sell it into the register in it?
I would imagine, yeah.
If you don't want to register it, you decide stealing ships to like farm credits or something. Although, I wonder, can we steal Pascal Logan's ship and then auction it off? Auction off his own ship. Or register his ship. I don't know. If you can't like steal higher up ships, then I'm going to be disappointed in myself for wanting it.
I think that stealing higher up ships will work similarly to just Like, there'll probably be a skill for it. Like, lockpicking, hacking, that kind of thing.
So, do you think we'll be able to, like, break into an airlock by using our digipicks?
Well, I mean, I guess you could... It's a really good question, actually, because it'd probably work. Like, you'd have to deal the damage, and then you wouldn't have to break in, because it'd be broken.
Oh, okay. Just throw a couple mines at it or something.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Lexi? Sorry.
I was just going to say, well, there's a docking hatch. What if you, like, break that open? I mean, you won't be able to leave the planet with it, because you'd have a massive hole. Because we know ships have loading screens.
Yeah.
Or a form, because the way the hatch opens, that is the way you enter your ship, that is a loading animation thing that we're used to. That's interesting how they're doing ships. But breaking in, I don't know, because you could go by the ramp or you could go via the docking port, but I can't see any other way to break in to a ship.
Without causing, without breaking the hull and causing an implosion, which is quite a topical idea.
I don't think it would implode, like, on the ground. I think more likely the helium-3 tanks would ignite.
Oh, yeah, that'd look cool.
It's only an implosion. The ship would explode, definitely, if anything. But an implosion... there needs to be pressure somewhere. High pressure.
Yeah, I was just working in the current events in the world. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it would explode in space because it's a vacuum rather than pressure.
Well, water and space get compared a lot, but they're quite opposites. In water, you have the weight of the water. In space, you have the weight of nothing. You're just poetic. Pulled to celestial bodies that have gravity. And your ears can't tell what's up or down. We're underwater, you can't tell what's up or down. But also you can't... I mean, you're surrounded by water. Like, it's just as annoying, but it's... you've got the weight of the water as well.
While we're on the topic of water, and I know this is so unrelated, but it's Starfield... and you're probably never going to want me on this show ever again. But just sort of kind of related to ground vehicles, I guess. How do you think we'll be exploring the water around Neon? That's been like a topic of debate for a while, but we still know nothing. In fact, we've barely seen Neon.
So my opinion for a while has been that they're going to use the ocean as a way to lock off most of the planet. So all you can do is swim, and you can swim as far as you want, but it's probably going to be super deep and you won't find much that's interesting. That's my personal opinion. Yeah, with no boats.
That does make sense.
So the only thing of interest will be Neon.
Okay, so what I think is going to happen is, you know, in Fallout 3, when you jump off something high and when you hit the ground, you hear your bones break and, like, you do the ragdoll. I think that's going to happen when you jump off the platform. Is you're going to hit the water. You're going to smack it like a solid object and you're just going to hear all your bones break before you drown.
Yeah,
I don't
probably
think you're going to be swim.
Yeah. Well, what about, if you land, like, on another part of the planet, do you reckon that'll just... you won't be able to?
Well,
don't think it has land.
Yeah, in that Locations Insights video about Neon, it was Emil Pagliarulo who said Neon is on a... I think the words he used was a nondescript water planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, something along those lines.
But I feel like they'd still let us get to other parts of the planet. Like, there's no way that they just block off a whole planet. There's got to be some way. Like, maybe you can land on the water, and there's like a like some upgrade for your ship.
Oh, that'd be cool. Sense. Yeah, I like, did have. I did have the idea that it was a method to lock off the planet way before we knew there were 1,000 planets. I thought there'd be like a handful.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people did. Myself included. Like, there was no way. And then there was that one community member that was like, guys, the star maps, they're all connected. There's 1,000 planets. And it's like, no, there's not. There can't be. Everyone was like, no, no. And he's like, no, look at how these star maps connect. And everyone's looking them like a nut job. And then now it's known that they were correct.
I bet in that person's bedroom they had like a cork board with all these screenshots of the star map with like red yarn connecting them all. Oh, that's great. So let's see.
Oh, some new news to report according to Tom Warren.
Oh, live on the show. Ooh. Love it.
Ah, interesting.
It's from the Microsoft versus FTC case, and it does involve Bethesda. Because Microsoft is obviously fighting for Activision Blizzard to get that to go through and then bring like Call of Duty to more platforms. And other stuff. So Tom Warren has... just let me load the Reddit post. Okay, so... this is from The Verge. Microsoft acquired Bethesda after hearing Starfield would be exclusive to PlayStation. When Microsoft heard Starfield was going to skip Xbox, Phil Spencer decided to buy Bethesda instead.
What a power move.
Do you remember those?
I remember the rumors.
Yeah, 2020, very early.
Yeah.
That would line up because it was near the end of that year. As pre-orders were going live, that they announced it.
I remember being quite concerned that I would have to switch teams and go over to PlayStation this generation, because the writing was kind of on the wall for Starfield going over to PlayStation. You had Deathloop being PlayStation exclusive, Ghostwire Tokyo being PlayStation exclusive. Sony was buying up all sorts of studios. They were really kicking butt in the exclusives department. And I was honestly, I wasn't really expecting an acquisition, but an exclusivity deal for Starfield I thought was very much on the table for PlayStation. And then just absolutely out of nowhere came the Xbox acquisition. So that is super, super interesting.
I did not expect it. It's like every time I think about it, it's insane. Like I could say, like, like you said, I thought a Starfield exclusivity, like a thing for PlayStation, was definitely a possibility, but I did not see the Xbox acquisition coming. I remember going crazy over that.
So that's... so if Starfield was going to be a PS5, it wouldn't be the Starfield we're getting, because I believe instead of making new content with the, you know, the delay and all this, with the extra time Microsoft gave them, because I think under ZeniMax, Starfield would have been a 2021 game, or 22 at latest. I don't think ZeniMax would have delayed it further. I think ZeniMax would have pushed it out for 21. That's just a personal opinion. And they were a private company, so, you know, they had the investors and stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot more pressure when they weren't a part of Xbox. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Like, with the extra time, instead of making new content, what they could do is restore cut content. I've heard that. I don't know if that they've actually said that. But this could be a Bethesda game where we get the least amount of cut content because they're restoring it all.
Not mad.
And I hope that's true. And if it was, you know, they didn't buy ZeniMax, we might not have the version we have to that we're going to have in 3 months. It's unfortunate PlayStation gamers can't will be able to play this game, but
I think it goes... always. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry. I was just going to say, and it goes both ways because Sony has been locking off, and Sony basically forced Microsoft's hand to buy ZeniMax because they pay Square Enix. They have a contract with Square Enix. I think it's a contract that PlayStation can go. Sony can say we don't want this game on Xbox. Here's a bunch of money, and that's why Final Fantasy VII Remake isn't on Xbox. That's why 16 isn't on Xbox. It's just crazy. And after the Ghostwire and Deathloop deals, like, what was Microsoft supposed to do? Lose more games?
I also think that exclusivity on Xbox, like, I have nothing against PlayStation. I own a PS5. I've played God of War Ragnarok. I pre-ordered Spider-Man 2, so, like, I have nothing against PlayStation, but I think that exclusivity, especially with a Bethesda game, like a BGS game, is just heaps better for Xbox than it would have been on PlayStation. Like, if you look at mods, for example, with Fallout 4, that's, like, Xbox far better. Not just mods, there's even FPS boost on, like, the old games now with Series X. That's another thing. Game Pass, allowing them to reach that wider audience. And also, I just feel like, I don't know, I just can't see a BGS PS exclusive. It just doesn't seem right.
They haven't had a great time with PlayStation, at least from the outside's perspective, because they didn't make the PS3 version of Skyrim. I don't think they were working on it, but the PS3 port of Skyrim was so broken they had to step in at some point. Because when that launched, the PS3 version of Skyrim was just terrible. It barely worked. 20 FPS, maybe. I kept crashing. So many bugs. More bugs than the 360 version. I don't think they did the Oblivion port for PS3, and that had less content because that didn't have the smaller DLCs, only had the 2 expansions, and that came a year after the Xbox version. And with the PS4 and Xbox One, they still had Microsoft deals because Fallout 4 was on the Microsoft stage. And they had Xbox marketing deals. And with Fallout 76, if you remember, the beta came to Xbox first.
Yes,
it did. And it also had Xbox marketing.
Yeah, I remember the trailer was shown first at the Xbox showcase.
And I've heard they've struggled with the PS versions. I can't say that for sure because I'm not Bethesda. Can only speculate. They've got a better history in Microsoft, and I don't think Starfield would have the impact it might have if ZeniMax wasn't bought out, because they would have pushed it out earlier and it might have, well, I don't want to say flopped, but it might have not sold quite as great as it could have.
Yeah, and then you have to consider,
yeah,
like Game Pass as well. And you can see, like, with the last year's showcase and this year's showcase, the difference between the two, like, what a year, a difference, what the, oh my God, the difference that a year can make.
Mm.
So yeah, you're right. I don't think it would have had that same impact. Anyway, sorry for interrupting.
No, you're good. What do you think, Mitch?
Well, as someone who hasn't played on PlayStation since the PS2 days, I don't have any experience with a Bethesda game on PlayStation, so I can't really speak to the condition of their games through the years. However, you could kind of sense that tight connection between Xbox and Bethesda going all the way back to Morrowind, which was an Xbox exclusive, funnily enough. It did seem a little backward that they were looking at going towards Sony, but it's almost like they almost fell to the dark side, but then they found themselves coming back home and all is right in the world.
it was the ZeniMax board director, because apparently they were the ones that made Arcane, make Redfall as a live service game. That's what I heard. Half the team was on board, half the team wasn't on board with Redfall. But then with Starfield, I think money. Sony could offer millions of dollars and ZeniMax would like money in their eyes, cha-ching, cash register sounds. It wouldn't be Todd's decision. Like, I don't think Todd wants exclusivity for Starfield. I don't think any of the developers do, but I mean, they're owned by Microsoft now. They don't really get a choice. And it's the same with the Test 6 exclusivity. We know it's going to be exclusive. They're just dancing around it so people don't get angry right now. We know Elder Scrolls is going Xbox exclusive. Like, there's no reason why it wouldn't. That, and if it's true, 5 years, 2028, Elder Scrolls 6, it could be a next-gen launch exclusive, which means not on this generation. That it would launch on the next console, which would be the first Elder Scrolls game to be a console launch title. But think of how many sales that console would make just for that game.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to remember the resources that they no longer have to dump into making a PlayStation version of the game. I think the Xbox and PC versions are going to be better off without them having to divert resources to a third edition of the game. As unfortunate as that may be for PlayStation folks.
Yeah, and the Xbox runs a version of Windows. I'm not sure if it's Windows 11 yet, but it's definitely 10, because I remember when they merged the 10 into like 2016. That was like a massive event for the Xbox. I don't know if anyone remembers that. It's as close to it's as close to Windows today, but the PlayStation is Linux-based? At least what it's based on is Linux. I don't know how true that is. It's got the PlayStation OS, like that's what they call it, but what it was originally. And it requires completely different tools to develop for the PlayStation because it's not Windows.
And I think
I was a PlayStation exclusive bug on Fallout 4 was the 0 kilobyte bug. Everyone knows about the 0 kilobyte bug, right?
I don't know.
To catch you up, the 0 kilobyte bug would prevent you from saving completely. It would say you can't save, there's 0 kilobytes or something. Something to do like that, and you couldn't do anything. You couldn't save, you couldn't... It would just keep saying there's 0 kilobytes. And it would, like, mess up your game. And this would even without mods. And I don't think it's even fixed properly. It's rare, but it still happens. And it only happens on that version of the game, as far as I know.
Jeez.
Yep.
Well, we have to deal with it no longer. We have a few more things to talk about with the Todd Howard IGN interview, so if I could shift gears a little bit, I think we'll go to that.
Yeah.
The shipbuilding... No, you're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just thought that was really interesting to bring up, because it kind of gives people insight to Microsoft's, like, reasoning. It wasn't just, oh, let's buy Bethesda so we can have more games. It was more, we could lose Bethesda to Sony.
That is, yeah.
Sure, yeah. Almost as like it was more of a defensive move than an offensive one.
Yeah. I think even Pete Hines said today, or yesterday, whenever it was, that he doesn't think Starfield would be out in 2.5 months if it was going to be released on PlayStation. So I think even they were aware of that. They see the positives of the exclusivity, even if they don't want it. So yeah, Anyway, that was very interesting. Thank you for bringing that up, Lexi.
Yeah. So we know that shipbuilding and outposts are not meant to be, you know, you start the game and you get right into it. Both of those systems will cost a lot of credits, so they're going to be late game stuff. You need skills to do a lot of those functions in shipbuilding and outposts. So this isn't going to be something we're doing right away. And this speaks more to the philosophy that Todd Howard's talked about so much, where they're building Starfield to be played for a long time, for hundreds of hours, years of real-world time. I wonder how strong that barrier is going to be, where, like, will you be able to... Excuse me, I sneezed. Will you be able to... So will we be able to, like, start an outpost or customize our ship at, like, level 5 or level 10, just be more limited by it? Or will that be actually locked off until, like, a later skill? I wonder how strong that barrier is. And I guess we can look to their older games, too. They seem to be increasingly a fan of tying content and the ability for the player to discover content to the player's level. Fallout 4, the entire map is built around what level the player is. In Skyrim, they didn't do it too much. You could kind of go anywhere at any level and do most things at any level. Fallout 76 is very level locked, and we now know the systems will be level locked. So yeah, I don't know. It's just an interesting kind of philosophical battle there between what do you give the player from the get-go.
I think we know that Starfield is going to be more similar to, like, Fallout 4 and their previous games rather than 76, with their, like, scaling system. What it was called, One Wasteland or whatever. But I think, like, the outpost building and ship building will be thrown into the main story, like, integrated into it probably fairly early on, but you just won't be able to do a lot with it. It'll be like a really basic sort of, like, in the main story, you change one module on a ship, or, like, you build one room and, like, a generator, and then a side quest is the option to continue with that. But I think that it's, I think in Fallout 4 it was sort of similar, like, you meet the Minutemen and then you sort of just, like, work with them and start with the settlement building, but then it advances as you progress through the story and you level up and all that. So it'll be the same, I think. We won't know until we play it.
Sure. Lex, we have some news about romancing, and I have bad news for you. It will not involve Vasco.
Why'd you do this, Talon? Why'd you do this to me? Vasco is my lover, and shout out to all the robosexuals out there. Of course, I'm memeing, but, you know, I do love Vasco in a non-romantic way.
Give it 1 week and you'll get your mod.
Yeah. I can't wait. they said there's only four romanceable, but there's more companions, obviously. It's not just like four. It can't be.
I think some of the like generic crew members and like random people you can meet at in cities that we see in the direct, they can also act as companions, even if they're like not as in depth as those four.
Yeah.
Yeah, like just they'll be able to join you and fight and all that.
I think I saw Matty say he thinks it's a step back. He thinks it's a downgrade from Fallout 4, which had 10 at launch. But I disagree there because it's quality over quantity for me. If those four companions that you can romance are in depth, like really, really deep, deeper than Fallout 4's, I think that's a huge upgrade. I'd rather have less. I think anyone would. Anyone would prefer less high quality romance. Romance quests and that interactions than 10 or 20 more bland and simple romance options.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, if you compare Skyrim with Cyberpunk, for example, like, you get the two sort of extremes where, like, you can marry anyone, but you see how that's, like, really, it limits the depth and like how much, like, yeah, you're married, but it's sort of limiting on the role playing.
An interesting point or topic. Can we get married in Starfield? Like, we max romance. Can we get married?
That's an excellent point. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that one up too.
I'd love, you know, your romance Sarah Morgan, Arthur Morgan, your romancer, and you can get married in the chapel. I mean, that path isn't for me. My path is walking down the aisle with Vasco.
I knew it was coming.
Holding hands, swinging hands.
That is a great question, Lex, because we also know about the four different religions.
Yeah. Wow. This got a lot deeper than I thought it was going to go. That's really, yeah, something I never really thought about. The four religions could have different customs, like with marriage and all that. Wow. Yeah. I mean, if marriage is in the game, I'd expect it to be a lot more in depth, because like what I was saying, more in depth than Skyrim, that is. But this is what I was saying before with like if you look at Cyberpunk, they have like fully fleshed out romance stories, and there are how many in Cyberpunk, like 5 or 6? So I can imagine 4 in Starfield will probably be like really in depth, and I'm sure that the marriage, like if marriage is in the game, you can expect it to be a lot more exciting than Skyrim. Not saying that Skyrim was bad, though. I mean, I still love it.
I think the jump's going to be comparable to Skyrim, to Fallout 4.
Yeah.
How giant of a leap. I think it's going to be the same. Yes, there's going to be less. But didn't they talk about there might be extra support for Starfield in the long run?
Yes.
Uwu eyes.
You never know what they're gonna do.
So,
because we normally get 2 expansions, which normally how it works, because they do it very specifically. The first expansion will be generally, if you go based off all the way to Fallout 4 from Morrowind. From Oblivion, because Morrowind added two locations. One expansion will add new locations to the map. So for Starfield, in that context, I'd say existing planets would get new locations or new randomly generated available locations. Cities might get new locations as well. And then I think there will be an expansion for planets. Like, there will be new planets for new content, rather than going to existing planets for content. But we might, if we get an extra year of support, we could get two more, so we could get like four expansions and then other DLCs. You'd take away from Test 6, but four expansions, I mean, that's a lot of content.
One of the things,
and that's big content.
One of the things Todd talked about I think it was his interview with Ryan McCaffrey quite recently, he said their plan for the game is one that I think mirrors Fallout 76, which is to have content drops of varying sizes. So like a few small ones and then kind of intermittently placing like larger content drops throughout that post-release cycle, which is exactly what they're doing in 76. I think there is room for like, you know, have a few updates where they add a new city or a new location, some new quests to the existing planet, and then like you say, Lex, add a new system that, you know, pay $10 and you get a new system with a whole bunch of new quests. Like, yeah, I could see him doing that.
I think pretty much, yeah, that's what they'll do. Before we get that first Shattered Space, is that what it called? What it's called? Shattered Space.
Yeah, I'd expect that within 6 months.
We get that. Yeah, I'm thinking we'll get at least two smaller things first. Whether go ahead.
Oh no, sorry. I think they've promised that because even if Starfield quote unquote failed, at least they would have promised something. They would have promised something post-launch that this is hypothetical. I don't think it's going to happen. Starfield flopped. Usually the developer go-to is jump the next game. That's what Arkane did after Redfall and Roundhouse took over, I believe. Which was always going to be the... But they didn't stick around. Like, Roundhouse is fixing Redfall as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, I think the thing would be to jump ship straight after. I think and Mass Effect Andromeda was supposed to have DLC and they abandoned it as soon as shit went down with that game. So at least the guarantee of one expansion, I think that's a bold move.
Yeah, I think that just shows how much confidence they have too.
Yeah, it's like, hey, even if this fails, we're still going to give you at least one big DLC. Yeah. So at least you get something and you don't feel like, oh, they've just abandoned it.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they do. They're too passionate about this.
Exactly. And like, they still haven't abandoned Fallout 76 and that wasn't the most, like, well-received game.
I think it was Microsoft that actually pushed them to continue supporting 76, like... It's what you do with it.
Do we want to go to merch?
Yeah, merch.
Alrighty. So I was thinking, Lex, I didn't talk with you about this, but I was thinking maybe we could do this as a segment near the end of every episode. Just kind of go through the merch store and give everyone an update on what's sold out, what's still in stock. And if there's any new drops, I thought that might be kind of cool and quick.
Okay.
So, yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to put that on you during the show. but I have the...
No, that's good. You're good.
Okay. So yeah, we've got the information right here. This is only the US store, as far as I know. So maybe we can figure out getting like other regions on the show too. I don't have a way of obtaining that information, obviously. But in the US, you can still obtain the Constellation jacket, which is $95. That kind of went semi-viral a few months ago because it looks sort of interesting. The Constellation beanie is $22. That one looks real cool. I'll probably be picking that up. And then if you're a skater...
I've got it open in front of me now. Like, the US store says it's out of stock.
The beanie?
Yeah, which is a shame.
No, please don't tell me. I'm checking the international store. Please let the beanie be in store.
I'm spreading misinformation. I just checked it yesterday.
I want the beanie.
This is shocking.
Okay, so
the only thing that's like in stock is the jacket and the skate deck. What is a skate deck?
It's a skateboard.
Whoa. The Constellation Edition's back in stock on the international store.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. The beanies and the basket is still out of stock.
So, count even desk mat is out of stock?
No, that's in stock. Okay. And the logo, but not the retro Constellation one. Everything else is out of stock.
The mat's out of stock here.
I really wanted the Explorer bundle.
Okay.
I got it. I'm going to do an unboxing. Is that the collector's edition, yeah, boy?
Oh, yeah, I got the collector's edition. That was like $500.
But do you know what sucks? Like, really sucks? What was I going to say? What were we talking like? I need a refresh. Sorry, I only got up like an hour ago, so.
I'm rooting for you. So I guess this segment is a bad idea because the availability of the merch changes wildly from like minute to minute and depending on what part of the world you're in. Mm-hmm. So, it was an idea.
Yeah, that's all right.
I guess what we can do is still walk through what all is in there, at least this once.
I guess, yeah.
So we've been over the Constellation jacket, the beanie, the skate deck. If you're a skateboardist, you can get a Starfield skate deck. There's the Constellation desk mat, the Starfield logo tee, which is just a classic black tee with the white logo. I have that one. It's very comfortable and it's been through the wash probably a couple dozen times and it's not wearing at all. So that is a good shirt, $26, not too badly priced either. The Retro Constellation tee is the one with the Constellation patch on the front, the white shirt. The Constellation Edition, of course, is the game. The Explorer's Bundle, I think that's what has the Vasco statue and stickers.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Did you get the Explorer's Bundle, Lex?
I did, yes. Out of... It's a Vasco statue. Like, you know me. It's 8 inches tall, which sounds small, but... that's probably just a little bit shorter than your Series X. If you want to like do comparisons, it's probably either around the height of a Series X or just a little bit shorter.
I want it so bad.
but you know what's really like funny about it? If you check the page, it says... I'm just double checking. It doesn't ship until October.
Oh, that's bizarre.
So imagine, okay, you're playing Starfield for an entire month and then you get Vasco. It feels less special to get it after you've been playing it for so long.
I don't know if I agree with that. Because now you've played the game for 100 hours, and now you have an attachment with Vasco, and then he shows up at your doorstep.
What if you just hate Vasco? Like,
how could I hate Vasco? Like,
you never know. He might just be the worst companion.
Now you have a voodoo doll.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the Adore. Like, I said I wasn't going to do it. Like, you'd have to be insane. I want the adoring fan now. I want that because I wasn't shown a third trait. I want Dream Home.
It's going to be so hard to pick traits.
I want the kid dude
stuff, adoring fan in Dream Home.
Oh, the kid stuff. I just banged. I hope there's like poisons and like frenzy poisons and just like give your father or mother like a frenzy potion. or injection, and then like watch them fight each other. We've had that conversation before, Mitch, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
And now you won't. Don't do this in real life. Never. Your parents love you, or if they don't, or your foster parents or whatever, they care for you. Don't do this. Well, there's no such thing as a frenzy. Well, there's rabies, but. I mean,
you can't. Okay.
I don't know where I'm going with this, but I don't know if I could go with that one.
Your parents are going to die. I think that's what we got from that. In the game. In game, parents are going to die.
In game. Actually, that reminds me, there was a study of like seeing psychopathy traits in gamers. And there's the Bethesda players are like, oh shit. You always do that quick save thing and you go and kill an NPC.
You ever see the memes where it's like, it shows like NPCs' reactions when they see the player quick save and they've got like a terrified look on their face?
But yes, that's what I was. I completely forgot to say it, but yeah, it ships in October, which I find weird. I think it's very weird. So the cow, they're the achievement badges we saw on the ship.
Yes, that is.
They're not just. One of them looks like Vault Boy.
Yeah.
One of them looks like Vault Boy.
That's awesome.
Just look, the thumbs up and the art stuff. I mean, it's not. But you know.
There's some interesting. Like implications last time I checked.
Yeah.
I could be like losing it, but I think that some of them had some like really cool things that they were alluding to. And I'm just getting it up now.
There was one that was like Barrett's Space Cadets or something. Barrett's.
Where is it? Here we go.
Something like that.
That's just a Vault Boy. Queen and country, what does that mean? Finding the galaxy's edge, I assume that's just reaching the last system. So many different. The Living Stone Project, the 10th planet seems to be like an actual part of the game rather than just like a Easter egg. Why is that like the Vogel mission, which is a giant octopus? A squid, sorry.
Just quickly, I've noticed in the description it says keep your trusty expeditionary robot companion close with your Starfield Explorers Bundant. Oh shit, no, that's the wrong one. Of the many questions that drive a person into the great unknown, are we alone? Must be one of the most compelling. So, I mean, is that like a. You know, everyone's asking that question. Where are my alien waifus, Todd?
It was Barrett's Folly that I was thinking of. Sorry.
And then it continues. But since you have Vasco, the answer is simple, no, and you're just getting started. It's. Might just be a joke, but
you never
know. I mean, bringing them up in merch, are we alone? I mean, at least they acknowledge that. And another thing, the statue bundle includes a certificate of authenticity. I'm going to frame that and I'm going to put it on my wall.
Certificate?
I own a Vasco statue.
Amazing. By the way, I just wanted to point out for our audio listeners, we are talking about the 15 or so stickers that come with the Vasco statue on the Bethesda Gear Store. They're like these mission patches that allude to some interesting stuff in the game, just in case it was hard to pick up on that in, on the audio.
Yes.
There's one that shows a kraken enveloping an entire planet.
Yeah, that's what I call it, an octopus, because I'm stupid. but yeah, the giant, the large squid thing. That's interesting as well. Also, New Age Resolution. What could that be? The new Golden Hand, Hind. Golden Hind project? What? So many different things.
I'm sure this is really good stuff for this show, because this is like probably some pretty deep lore.
Yeah, you can get into that. Maybe I can come back.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We'll do like a Starfield patch analysis.
Before we move on, though, I do have one extra thing I want to add. I don't see many people talking about the 10th planet anymore.
Yeah, I think it was just mostly sort of.
I think it was copium, because we had no news.
Yeah.
So we were like, me. We need to find a content. And speaking of content, the growth on the channel's been insane. On YouTube, sorry.
Yeah, everywhere. And Countdown, you've been having even better growth than us. Yeah. But yeah, across the board, just so many more people interested in Starfield. It's been great to see.
And it's just the whole community is amazing. Everyone that I've interacted with, it's just so many great people. I love it.
That has been the greatest joy of doing this podcast, is meeting these people from all around the world, quite literally. And they've all been so kind, so supportive and loving. It has been one of the great joys in my life of the last couple of years. So yeah, it's just been so much fun.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we can move on to recommendations then. So we haven't done this in a while. It's been a few episodes since we did this segment, either because I forgot to bring it up or because we had a lot of other stuff to talk about or we were on a time crunch, whatever. But we're going to do it this time. Our recommendations for those new listeners or for those who may have forgotten, because since it's been so long, at the end of the show, we pick any absolutely anything. It can be a movie, a TV show, music, a book, anything that you think scratches the Starfield itch. And Count and Alex, I don't know if you have anything at the ready. Are either of you?
Yeah, I have a couple of things.
Oh, nice. Let's hear it.
First of all, we'll go with something. It's not really directly Bethesda related or Starfield related, but sort of because of all the Lovecraft stuff in Fallout and the Elder Scrolls. I don't know if anyone is interested in that aspect, but I've been reading a collection of Lovecraft's short stories, and it's just excellent to see what inspiration Bethesda drew from his work. And I'm interested to see what they do in Starfield regarding that as well, because like there's just so much potential with 1,000 planets.
Absolutely. Yeah. Call of Cthulhu is a Nintendo Switch game that is really, really fun. It came out a few years ago. So are you recommending just the entire scope of Lovecraft's literature?
I would. Yeah, I guess pretty much, because I bought this collection of 50 short stories, and reading through them, there's just so much, and you can see throughout all of these little bits that just sort of, you can see that Bethesda have been inspired by it. So yeah, definitely all of Lovecraft stuff.
That's a really, really good pick.
Can't wait for the Lovecraft stuff in Starfield to like scare me on stream.
Yeah, me too.
I bet it'll be the fish and neon. I think those will be quite Lovecraftian.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think maggot moles look quite Lovecraftian.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Because they remind me of like
have like the potential to be. Sorry, Lexi. Have the potential to be like really weird. Like we've seen, because like the Xenofresh Corporation could be dealing with other fish other than just that, like the Aurora, like the small Aurora fish that we see. Like we have no idea, they could be finding some really weird alien stuff. And that's where I think some Lovecraft stuff could come in.
Beautiful. Lex, you got one?
Recommendation. I'm going to say it's nowhere near space, but Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, yes.
I love that game.
I've been playing it to get used to 30 frames.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I have been doing the same since the
I'm preparing. Where Todd
compared Starfield to Red Dead Redemption 2. And mentioned 30 FPS. I've been playing it. Like, it's, I think they've really done an excellent job with making you forget about 30 FPS.
Yeah. It's, at first, you're like, oh, this is giving me a headache. But you get used to it very quickly.
Yeah. Definitely.
But then when I go to my PC and I play Final Fantasy 14, I'm at 144 to 100 FPS. So there's a massive leap.
Yeah,
sure.
So I'm switching back and forth. So I'm adjusting to both. But with all my computer technical issues that I'm having currently, new motherboard tomorrow. So we're going to see how that goes. I think it's just the motherboard doesn't support my... I just whacked my microphone. I don't think my motherboard supports properly the speeds of my SSD, which is the it's the WD Black M.2, like the PS5 one that goes at like 7,000 megabits per second.
Dude,
that's the like PS5 speeds, SSD speeds. With the Xbox, it's close enough. You won't really notice, but I'm putting Starfield on disk drive. I've overexpanded myself with Starfield. I'm ready.
Beautiful.
Well, personally, I just have my Xbox, but I wish you the best of luck with all of your PC
Well,
stuff.
My plan is my PC is my personal save. So this is where I capture footage. This like gameplay. Like, if anyone who doesn't know, when we move to lore content exclusively, I'm gonna have gameplay of what we're gonna be talking about. So that's gonna be recorded on my PC. So it should be 60 frames. It should be all good. But when I stream, it'll be on the Xbox. So that will be 30. But that will be the stream exclusive save. And I'll be streaming as regularly as I can. There won't be a schedule. Hopefully I'll stream on launch. And that's just to interact with the community. And because that's what I want with Lorefield. I want to always be like, I don't want to, you know, the community is like, oh, these YouTubers are too big for us. Like, no, I don't want that. I want to engage with the community. I want to keep that relationship going. I want to do community events, all sorts. That's my plan. So if you didn't know that, you've got a lot to look forward to. And let's build this community higher. We can do it. We can hit 400. 400 subs. We can do it.
400 subs. Pretty close, yeah. Let's do it. RDR2 is a fantastic choice. That is quite an experience. It's one of those games that even if the style of the game or if the story isn't really grabbing you, just playing it to appreciate the technical and artistic achievement that it is very, very worth it.
Yep.
My recommendation this time... Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I don't know how many people know this, but RDR2 has a smaller map than Grand Theft Auto 5.
Does it really?
Mm-hmm. Technically, they've measured it. It's smaller, but with horseback, you won't notice.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. And to be fair, the GTA map doesn't feel big because you're always using, like, jets, planes, cars.
Yeah.
Zipping around the map, you just don't notice it. But with RDR2, you're on horseback, so it feels bigger.
It does feel so much bigger. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy that they tacked on the original game's map. Do you think that was like an afterthought? Like, with, you know, maybe they had some extra time in development because the map is so weirdly shaped. So they're like, let's just add New Austin too.
I think, were they, I don't, I think it was rumored that they might add in Mexico, but they never did.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, the way it was presented kind of makes it seem like it was an afterthought. Because there's nothing to do there. and there's no Mexico, but it's still cool. So, like, I get it. I get why they did it.
Yeah.
I got to play that game on Series X.
Oh, it is so good.
I'm going to download it today.
It's 30 FPS. There's no difference. It's just so good.
I recommend, if you don't play 4K, you should get, like, zero drops. But, if I play it on 4K, I'm having a few texture errors. My jacket keeps flopping in and out of pixelated mode. and no shadows, but it's not optimized for Series X, so I expect it. It's running in back compat mode. But anyway, you might get one FPS drop in Saint-Denis, which is the most demanding area. Like, you will be solid 30 throughout the whole thing. Thanks to these consoles.
Awesome.
So, I think you play... Do you play 1080p, Mitch?
No. When I'm at home and not at school, I can do 4K.
Oh, nice. Enjoy the 4K RDR2, then.
I will. That was such a good pick, Lex, because I'm... Literally, as soon as we're done, I'm going to go install it. That was awesome.
80 gigabytes. Good luck.
Is it only 80? I thought it was over 100.
Yeah, I thought it was like 120.
Oh, okay. It's 100. Okay. Okay.
Even worse. Okay. I'll make do. I'm going to pick a movie, which I haven't done in a while. And I'm not a huge movie guy, but I did just recently, within the last few weeks, watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind for the first time. And it captured me in a similar way to 2001 A Space Odyssey, in just it feeling like a very important film for any sci-fi fan, but it really just taps into that whole, like, what's out there mysterium, if that's a word. Really cool movie. It takes place on Earth in the present day, which is the 80s, because that's when the movie was made. I won't spoil anything, but it's very, very different from 2001, which I say is my favorite movie of all time. But it does kind of go into some of the same themes. Really, really cool movie. Pretty good special effects for the time it came out. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Do check it out if you haven't, before Starfield comes out. Have you seen it, either of you?
I recommend it. No, I will watch it, though. Definitely.
I will throw it on the list. The list that I tend to forget I even exist.
Yeah, the ever-growing. Yeah. I think we've all got one of those. But yeah, it's pretty good. So, I think we can wrap up. Holy cow.
Well, deviations, I apologize, but that news, like, that literally just dropped. Like, I saw it on Twitter.
That was a great conversation to have about the acquisition and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Count, where can we find you? Please plug anything and everything that you wish to.
At Starfield_Count on Twitter. That's the main one. Just stay tuned for more information about what I'm going to be doing with YouTube. And you don't know. I don't know. There could be something else. I'll surprise you.
Ooh.
Oh, and there's a giveaway currently. I'm currently partnered with Fanatical Games, and they've given me a code for a Steam key for the Starfield Digital Premium Edition. So enter that. Just like and retweet and follow me and Fanatical. And yeah, we'll pick a winner soon.
Awesome. Yeah, your Twitter, I will vouch on behalf of Lorefield, I guess. Your Twitter is a great place for the game. You've got a great community over there. You share finds. You've got, of course, the countdown, so you can always see how far we are from Starfield's launch. That has been a really, really good follow for me personally over the last couple of years.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. All righty. You can find us on Twitter at LoreFieldNet, where we share news, analysis, and finds about the game. You can also join us at the Lore subreddit, r/LoreField. That place has been popping off a little bit, similarly to the Starfield Countdown, since the Starfield Direct, which has been so amazing to see. We're also on YouTube as LoreField, where you can subscribe for all of our podcasts and some video content like Tales from the Settled Systems, Starfield Minute, which is decreasing from a daily series to a couple times a week, and of course this, the LoreField Podcast. We have a Discord, which has also revved to life in the last couple of weeks. Join us and some wonderful members of the Starfield community for lore discussion and more. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We will see you next time.
Farewell.
Bye, y'all.